Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be here today with Tushar Pandit, who's the Chief People Officer at Spins, a leading provider of retail consumer insights, analytics, and consulting for the natural, organic, and specialty product industry. With over 25 years of experience in tech-enabled businesses, from startups to multinational corporations, Tushar brings a global perspective to human capital leadership, and he's just a super, super fun guy to talk to. So really known for his business-led, insights-driven approach, Tushar really emphasizes the integration of people strategies with business objectives to drive sustainable growth. He's also a certified executive coach, which is really fun for me to kind of talk about the intersection of this, and holds an MBA from Ivy Business School, which is just like such a, just an amazing school. So I have so much respect and excitement to be here with you right now, Tushar, and can't wait to get started. Is there anything that I missed, though, that I didn't say about you or you'd want me to, bring up that I didn't bring up?
No. Well, Bobbi, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Your kind words about my background, it's wonderful. I would say just a couple of things. One, apart from loving planes and cars, which is an excitement there, I got my own dog as well. So, very close and dear to my heart. So.
Oh, wait, what kind of dog do you have?
He will be 4 next month, a mini Bernedoodle. So Bernese Mountain and Bernese.
Oh, I want a Bernedoodle. You have the dog that I want.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm jealous.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
I can't believe 4 years have gone by. I got him at 8 weeks.
Cute.
So, yeah.
Oh, wait, last question about your dog, but what is his name?
Kehar, which is Sanskrit for tiger.
Amazing. Beautiful.
Yes. Yes.
Well, if he jumps on, our call at any point, he is absolutely welcome.
Thank you. Well, he's in his daily routine of it's morning nap time. So don't talk to me.
Oh, he's a smart guy. Well, I'm just super excited to chat with you, Tushar. Every time we talk, I just feel like it's like we can just go so quickly because like ideas are flying all over the place. But one thing that I love, that I just love to like listen to you talk about is really, in this concept of future of work, it's really overplayed, but I do feel like you are kind of peeking around the corner in terms of what's coming and how we should be thinking about technology and human processes and like what is this sort of new landscape that we are, that's coming and, or maybe we're already in, but what comes to mind when you hear that?
It's a great question, and there's so much. I'm with you, the future of work, I actually feel that the future of work is already happening. I would say that we are multifaceted in a place this is irrespective of the organization, the size, whether you're private, whether you're public, whether you're global, whether you're domestic. There is so much happening, where we as leaders are being called upon even at a higher level than we have been at this point in time. And we can, there is what I would say, is there change fatigue? I don't know if we can even say that anymore, because we are now in the world of insights that will arrive to us at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 1:30 in the afternoon, it'll be new. And we just have to be okay with it. They are coming faster. Mm-hmm. As I'm saying at Mach 1, Mach 2 speed, and that is not going to be changing anytime shortly. There is leadership and change that is, dare I use the two words, AI, because there is probably tiredness of hearing those two words. But it's real. It's happening, and there's excitement, but there's a plethora of emotions associated with that as well, and that we need to talk about. And I would say that the third thing is, what does this mean for us? What is it going to look like in the next 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, let alone everything else that's going to come down? So, a lot of big things, a lot of big buckets, but I think we can certainly try to take an approach and go from there.
Yeah, you make me think. It's like the way when I listen to you speak, I imagine us going into this like new frontier, right? There's like this new landscape that we're literally showing up in a land where maybe we have some information and we're bringing some tools with us, but there's really in many ways like a new land that we've landed in. And you know, I think there's opportunity in this, but it's also, we know humans are really resistant to change, right? In general, like systems, including human systems, seek homeostasis. We don't want to change. And the way technology is growing right now, we're like forced to change. So there's this dissonance between kind of what needs to happen and kind of what people are feeling and fearing. But on the other hand, I think there's opportunity. Like I was teaching before COVID, through COVID and post COVID. And what we would always say kind of even before COVID kind of came was like the way industry was mapped against human psychology, they weren't in alignment, the way we're motivating people, the way we're kind of we were not optimized to like support people the way people need to be supported. But COVID and technology now have changed this like landscape, which allows us to kind of decide what we need and what works for us. The point of all that is to really, you know, talk with you around like, what does this look like? Like how are in your organization, like what are you seeing? How are you addressing the people that have that fear, who have that resistance to change? Like how do you kind of paint this picture of the future for them to get them excited, on board, curious, open to trying new things?
You're touching on everything. And it's all coming down to the change element of it, the fear element of it, the experimentation, and also the fun. So let's try to take this in bites. So I'm glad that you talked about the change factor, right? That has not changed. Look, we've all known or seen Kubler-Ross's change curve work, fantastic work, and it still stands today. Why? We are human beings. We are emotional based. And no one likes change. I mean, I'm old enough to say that I still remember this great book from the 1990s, Who Moved My Cheese? And I think that book is more relevant now than ever before in our workplaces. I truly would like everyone, and I'm not promoting it, I don't own any stock in it, but I truly believe that all of us need to once again take a read at it or take a refresher read at it, because it is applicable, happening today more than ever before, and it's not going to go away. You know, so let's talk about it.
Wait, Tushar, can you say a little sentence about what that book is for people who don't know it?
Sure. It really is about, in a nutshell, the author has said that when something changes at work, you know, you go through this reaction and emotion journey and saying, well, why did you do that? How dare you do that? You may not vocalize it, but certainly your mind is thinking away, but this is out of my comfort zone now. So yeah, it's basically talking about all the emotions and reactions we go through. And then what do you need to do about it? And how do you try to overcome? And so that is, it's a quick, simple book. It's a read, but it really starts to help any individual realize, look, things continuously change, and if I can incorporate that and take it on as a wave, how do I make it easier for myself and my journey? Because it is still about yourself and your journey, versus trying to be this resistor and then creating even more further angst within yourself. And so I would say that everyone should absolutely take a look at it. Bobby, you said the key important thing, and that is that no one likes change. And we don't like change in our personal lives, and we don't like change in our professional lives. And the more we vocalize or stop with that, I think we allow people to take a deep breath and say, it's true. Someone's actually calling it out. Oh, my apologies for that. And what do I mean by that? And that is where, look, you know, if all of us did not like change, then you are either still on a BlackBerry or a Motorola, but you're not.
Right.
You're on an Apple or you're on a Samsung or you're on a Google, right? You are on the version that the software company has already published, although you're still using, you know, iOS 5.0.
Yeah.
When you keep that in your mind, you're like, okay, I'm just going to have to continuously be okay with it. How I wish to be okay with it is now up to me. And that's the thing that we have to keep emphasizing.
I think what you're hitting on, Tushar, is that it's need two things. One, this concept of like nobody likes change, and underneath that generally is a fear. We're risk and like loss averse, right? So oftentimes people either consciously or unconsciously assume they're losing something.
Or loss of control.
And then a loss of control. And then we know as humans, we have two really primal needs: to belong and for control. So I'm just kind of highlighting that, because everything you're talking about is sort of through the lens is like, I want to be here. I want to be along for the ride. I want to have control over like what I'm doing here. And this change is potentially going to create a loss or upset this like path that I'm on. So I just, I'm hearing them, what you said.
With that, and this is where the final piece on the change element comes in, and then we'll get into the whole platform aspect of it. And that is, when was, as a parent, when was the last time you told your 12-year-old to go and clean their room? And what was your 12-year-old's reaction?
God, is that a, I have a 12-year-old, and is that a real question? God.
So why have we actually thought at times that it's okay to tell a 27-year-old at work what to do, or a 38-year-old, and go on and go on, go on? No one likes to be told what to do. And at times, we've all been there, whether we are at a company level, whether we are at a leader level, we have just infused change down people's lives. I wouldn't say the word throats, because it's their livelihoods, right? So we have to, in my opinion, by telling anyone what to do, you've already lost the battle right there, because an adult is never going to do that. Two, we need to do a much better job in meeting people where they are. And I like to still bring this concept of fun, and fun does not have to be there. And I'll get to that in a moment. So, you know, the reason why I talk about AI in this way, and I think it is extremely transformational, because it is really about what is going to take place certainly in the next 12 to 18 months. I am foreseeing and forecasting the new, what I like to call culture 3.0 version. And that is, you know, every organization is going to have this umbrella of intelligence that will be intelligence-based. And every single team is going to be rolling up into that. For the very first time in organizational companies, everyone's going to be level set. What I mean by that? Historically, we were ERP, then came cloud, and there's always been a pecking order. It starts with sales and revenue, then comes to finance, and then comes to operations, and then comes to supply chain. There's been a hierarchy of investments when it comes to technology. There's no such thing with AI. Every single team is now on the same playing field. So you are going to have a cluster of sales intelligences, finance intelligence, supply chain intelligence, marketing intelligence, HR intelligence, so on and so forth. And everyone is now going to have to come in and deliver. This is already happening now, and it's only going to further escalate within every single organization. Again, whether you're 100 employees or you're 55,000 globally publicly traded, it doesn't matter. Intelligence sets are now going to go up. So beam me up, Scotty. Start thinking that way. And that's exactly what's going to happen. Is already happening. And so if we know that this is happening, you know, how our work style is going to evolve is very, very different. And I don't think that we are paying attention to all of that. I just saw this study where they've stated that in the next 2 years, 30 to 40% of our interactions are going to be with avatars. Now, let's take a moment on that. That means that in any given day, you will have a few different meetings. Some of those meetings will be represented by an avatar. Some of those meetings are going to be represented with no representation, because the transcripts are going to come through. And so how are you going to feel about that at the end of the day? We had Zoom fatigue as a result during COVID. We have what I'm saying, that there's going to be reprogramming of our mental wellness, because are you going to ask yourself, wow, this meeting had these many avatars. What is that saying to me about where I play a role? You just touched on that. We don't like change. We want to have control. We want to be part of this. So are we answering that question for ourselves, us as individuals, let alone being a member of a team, and then let alone being a member of an organization? And no one's asking us this. This is already happening, right? So that's one thing we need to start helping people realize, that the work style is going to be very different, because AI is not taking empathy away. AI is not taking away collaboration. AI is not taking away about your strategy with an operational plan and then designing what happens if downstream things go haywire. What's going to be plan C? What's going to be plan D? How I'm interacting is going to be very different. And so we have to start to help people. And I feel that the more we do this at a rudimentary, basic level, is going to be the start of how you get adoption achieved, that it is just not about, hey, we've got all these these AI tools, go ahead and use them. This is not Field of Dreams. before mm-hmm. all this technology, you couldn't build companies, get people on there and hope that they're going to stay. It has never worked before. It is never going to work in the future. So, you know, part of all of that, what you're trying to do is, let's start with something simple and let's get people excited about this and let's have some fun with it and help the overcome the fear, because there is a lot of that. So one of the things is we talk about 3D avatars. Have you ever had 3D avatar clinics? We're getting people excited about it. We're getting them involved. And I use this as a great example. One of our senior account executives, she has so many different brands. She is absolutely fantastic as a sales executive, getting her quotas year over year. She has a passion for shuffling. She has, she's known as a shuffler.
Wait, a passion for what? Shuffling. Oh, a shuffle?
Yeah.
Like shuffle. Shuffleboard?
No, or, the whole dance, the whole rhythm of shuffle.
Oh, like a dance.
Yes, the whole dance.
Wow,
amazing. She's a certified shuffler on top of that. When we are at our trade events, because we do a lot of this, her brand is known for that. She will actually start shuffling with clients and visitors. It's immaculate. And she's also designed a 3D avatar. She leads prospecting. Customers are seeing this. We are seeing it. We are learning from it. And that's what I'm talking about. The relevancy of the examples are so real. And we've gone to her and said, well, hey, can we use you? How can we have you being a teacher, peer-to-peer teaching, leader-to-leader? Yeah. So by doing a lot of this, this is how we're helping people to say. Then we talk, you can talk about co-pilot, you can talk about whichever one you have, right? There's so many different things. You can talk about Gen AI in recruitment, in compensation, in operational coaching. My point in all of this is that this is the journey. And we have to start to plant that journey block by block, stone by stone. Mm-hmm. And as people are now on this path for themselves first, in my opinion, we need to do it first. That's how the organization success is only going to extrapolate then. That's how people are going to be very comfortable, because we are getting you out of your comfort zone. We are telling you and showing you, not telling in a negative way, but this is what the world is doing right now. This is where all of the things are. How do we help you get comfortable with it? And this is all part of transformation. It is culture. If we are talking about that culture 3.0 is going to look like this, we need to start helping individuals getting over there. And it may sound biased, but I truly believe that the chief people officer and their teams are the ones who need to lead this transformational cultural change. We have to apply it across all of the teams and all of the functions. We need to bring in our experts and help us build all of this, because part of this work style, every organization is going to have 300 to 500 different Gen AIs operating within the platform. There is great work being done where even within HR, there's a new AI HR operating model where all of the tasks are all taken care of, and the people within the HR organization are going to be product owners and product managers. It is absolutely fantastic work that's coming by. It's not going to happen overnight. But in order for us to help everyone, but have you thought about that? That your work is getting done with Gen AI as a peer and as a partner that I'm not going to get to see, but I'm going to interact with.
I think that's the foundational thing that like people are sort of scared of, right? But I think if I'm hearing you and I can just hear your coaching coming through here, which is like, you know, like people are scared, resistant to change, however we want to conceptualize that. And then I think what you're really saying is like the first step is like moving towards the conversation versus saying like, this is just the way it is, get on board or get out type vibe, which some leaders like sort of say implicitly or not, right? Just sort of like, and then kind of engaging the conversation, raising consciousness around the value of this, helping paint this future around what this could be and how people can truly use AI as a partner, not a replacement. And then think about other strategies and really engage them around like how to do this to be like more valuable, a better worker, feel better. And then really kind of like coaching them down from like a systemic perspective, like really kind of rolling this out across the board. And then like helping them, because I'm thinking it really reminds me of motivational interviewing. I don't know if you know this like tool at all from like coaching. It's not interviewing at all. It's a coaching modality, which is like when someone kind of feels imposed upon, like they push back. It's called reactance. They just don't want to do it inherently, right? So this is really to get at holding a place of almost like neutrality or empathy. I get that this is hard. You know, this is the vision I have. What do you think about this? What are you scared of? Inviting conversations like that, and then sort of showing them through like the workshops that you're describing that this could actually be fun and engaging. And this could actually make your life like a lot easier if you actually embrace this.
You
that's kind of like what I'm hearing you say.
You hit the key spot, and that's the empathy, right? That's when we are bringing the whole person back in to say, let's talk about your fear. Let's talk about what you're not happy with. Let's talk about how we can help you, right? And even after through all of this, if it's not going to be for you, that's okay too. We have to allow mm-hmm. for the dialogue to take place. And that is mm-hmm. coaching. And it's not only coaching for an individual, but it's anyone like systems. It's systems coaching, yeah. but it's also just coaching in general. I always like to say most of us have played sports when we were kids. I always like to bring uh-huh. back some of the things that we did as kids, because I think at times at workplaces, we seem to forget those things, that the beautiful part about andragogy and learning as a kid was very different than as we are as adults, right? And every sports team, whether you are running track, whether you play football, whether you play football, whether you play hockey, doesn't matter what your sport is. You just don't have one head coach. You have several different coaches. Yeah. And what are those several different coaches trying to do? They're trying to build up your muscle. They are honing in the area that they know you need to get better at. They are inspiring you. They are being hard on you. They are motivating you. They are going through the classic rings of emotions as well as a leader in a different context as your coach. But once you get mm-hmm. there, they know it's difficult. They know it's going to be hard. But once you get there, you yourself know and feel that you're at the peak of your mountain, because now you've overcome resistance, fear, thoughts in your mind. We play more movies in our heads than mm-hmm. anyone else. Half the times our leaders are not even thinking that, but that's a whole other different story. But that's how we get there. And so by allowing the individual to, again, feel it, experience it, taste it, enable it, now they can say, maybe this is not that bad. You know, I've had a couple of leaders asking me, and I'm like, hey, you want to get into just understanding what AI is? Just spend some time with ChatGPT on the weekend with your kids. Just let your kids are going to teach you. Believe you me, they will get you faster. And I've had some people coming back and saying, this is incredible. I got time with my kid. I got some quality time. My child is my teacher. And I'm like, just take that moment. Just listen to yourself.
It's like an opportunity for connection.
My child is my teacher. Enjoy mm-hmm. and experience that, because we all can learn from everyone at every level. And I would even say then, and when you paint a vision, you know, paint a vision of trying to solve for a pain. Customer success and sales teams are so brilliant at this. It's called solution sales. We know this, right? They are listening first and saying, what is the pain that you're trying to solve for? So mm-hmm. one of the techniques that I like to use is I bring it back into the HR when I'm speaking with our team, but I'm also trying to help leaders and members who are our customers in the world of people ops. What is your pain? So I visualize this pain point. Mm. Hey, you've got a vacation request. Okay. So what do you have to do for your vacation request if you want to know? Well, I need to log in over here. I need to go and find out how much vacation I have. Then I have to find out in it. Then I got to enter it. Then I got to hope my leader gets it. Then I got to send them a Slack message or a team message. You got a thing. They've got to then log into the payroll system. They got to see it. They got to review it. They got to deny it. It's a pain. If there's any member or leader out there who tells me that it's not a pain in the neck as a customer, I want to talk to you, because I'd be like, wow, what part of that do you enjoy? Now imagine this, because it's actually happening and there's an AI platform that's already in play. The individual turns around and says, verbally too, the days of ChatGPT, even these are fading away. How much vacation do I have? Automatically tells it in. Oh, I do want to take, May 26th and 27th and 28th, because 26th is Memorial Day. I want to take the next 2 days off as vacation. Great. It automatically records it. It understands it, goes straight into your leader. Your leader already knows about it. Your leader says, oh, and by the way, it updates the entire HR system. No one talks to each other. It's all done in a matter
of. Amazing.
It's already happening. So now pain points are there. So again, my encouragement is that when you talk about the vision, you have to bring mm-hmm. everyone along, but then make it so relevant. One of the things that I like to call RUR. Think about RUR, R-U-R. It's an acronym. Mm-hmm. I love my acronyms. What does RUR mean? Relevancy, urgency, revenue. Every mm-hmm. one of us are talking about this at some point in time, because without revenue, you don't have an organization and none of us are here. Revenue solves all issues. Like, we talk a lot about this stuff. So we have to start to also enable it. So once the comfort zone is established, now we need to help interact, and we have to set the visions that are real, they are realistic, they are relevant. And from there, we start to see the utilization. Any organization cannot bring in all this AI infrastructure investment and then hope. And if you're going to do it top down, you have to be ready for the downstream impacts. There will be impacts. But if you build this journey, you build time, space for fun, for failure, for my fears, my emotions, I can promise you, you'll start to at least see the journey ahead where people are getting very excited about this, and then embracing it and then incorporating it is going to be much more easier. My final thoughts on all of this will be, this is happening because if anyone has looked at any of the key forums that are there, you know, Gemini, which is Google, they talk about this, that you can be, you know, a pair of glasses and you're looking at the code and saying, make this effective. You're taking around this and saying, all of this is already happening. It's not going to happen. How we manage it, how we enable it. Enablement is the key thing. How we foster it, how we cultivate it in our cultures is what we are being looked upon.
Yeah, you've brought this up a lot, like these parallels of almost like parenting or kids or like, you know, that kind of, and I always say like, there's so many parallels between parenting and leadership. But I think what you're really hitting on is like, when something's new, like think about a little kid sort of scared to do something, you're not just going to like force them down the path, you know, that's just going to create friction, trauma, like all the things that doesn't work. You have to like go step by step and figure out what motivates them, talk with them and kind of help them get there. And I think the way you're describing this process is almost similar. It's like, really, what's your biggest pain point? How can I help you almost be a little bit of a support or a teacher to figure out what tools are best going to like serve you here? Because you know, there's going to be the highest rate of adoption when there's like the pain on their side is strong enough. Right? So they're going to be more open to change or utilization of different tools if it's going to solve real problems versus feeling like there's an unknown tool that I'm being sort of encouraged to use that I don't even know what it is. It's not relevant to me. So the utilization is going to be a lot lower.
Relevance.
Right? So it's like, how big of a pain? Yeah.
Irrelevance in fear as well. And because if that fear is that this AI is going to just take my job away, I'm just going to resist it. I'm going to continue to resist it. And just because I may be doing it doesn't mean internally I'm not resisting it. There's a whole different concept in there too. Yeah. And it's directly tied to the organizational strategy. Adoption metrics are very critical, right? I've always said this, that every single instrument that has been implemented or platform or ERP, this is not new. You've got to be able to report out quarter over quarter what your utilization metrics are, because you may have a launch and you may have 88%, but then in Q2, if only 47% of the organization's teams are opening it, you have a problem and you need to solve for that problem.
Yeah.
I would say that this is where I think that, you know, when we talk about the change, we are very good at, well, why? We talk a lot about the why. And I think that why always needs to be there. I think the how and the meaningness also needs to be added in.
Yeah.
I think that we don't do all good jobs collectively in everything that we do. It's not only about AI. It's anything that we have to start embracing and making sure that we are also answering the why, how, but also the meaningfulness behind it. Because when that meaning happens, that's when the shift in mindsets happen. One final thing, and this just came out, and I love this. This just got published by the World Bank, and they've done a quick comparison analysis of the top 10 core skills needed in 2025. And then they've shown the top fastest growing skills needed by 2030. So we are already in the 5-year horizon. The number one is AI and big data. Okay. That's not different from 2025 in my humble opinion. But here are the things that I'm excited about. Number two, networks and cybersecurity. Number three, technological literacy. Tech literacy. I love that. I do not need to be an expert. I'm not going to go and learn how to code Python to learn AI. I just need to understand what AI enablement is all about.
Yeah.
Four, creative thinking. AI is not going to be able to do that. Resilience, flexibility, and agility. Curiosity and lifelong journey. As coaches, how many times do you always say, leadership is an ongoing journey. Leadership and social influence, talent management, analytical thinking, and environmental stewardship. So to me, here's another great global referenceable document that is just coming through and saying that it is not about the stuff that we are, our interactions, our leadership competencies, our human interactions, our technological interactions, all of these things are still very much of who we are, why we are part and members at a company, why the company cultures are going to be more than ever before critical. But what it is saying is, hey, as an employee, as a human being, you got to give me tools and techniques that are also very relevant today. If you're going to still talk about ERP, it's not going to land well.
Yeah, we could keep talking and we have to get ready to end. But the one thing I was thinking, just listening to you, this one theme I'm hearing from you too, is that like also remembering that humans like want to learn and grow. That is like, although we're sort of change resistant and there's a fear there, we also want to learn and grow. We just have to do it in our own way, in a way that feels like digestible and safe enough, so it's not so risky for us. You know, and so I think as leaders are kind of listening to you talk about this, those are things you want to be thinking about. How do you give people control? How do you use story and communication to help people understand the impact, how these tools can serve them? And then also, like, people do want to learn and grow. They just need to do it at their own pace, just like learning to ride a bike, right? And so really mapping whatever your change you're trying to sort of like sort of impose or invite people along really has to be mapped against their own willingness. Bobby's, so asking questions around that.
Bobby, spot on. Know. Three key final things I would say is, one, meet every single individual where they are. Not collectively as a team first. Every individual needs to allow their pace. Pace is so critical. You know, there's some people who can come Zoom immediately in Python. Others are not even interested, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Allow them there. And the third and the final thing, and this is where I would say it is up to the organization in your ecosystems. You need to establish the boundaries of what's going to be okay. We deal with a lot of third-party data, and so our governance are very strict about it because of the privacy, security, all of that. You cannot keep it open. You have to allow people to say, this is going to be your playing field. This is going to be your play square. Yeah. This is what you can do. And make it safe, make it creative, make it fun. But you can't keep it open-ended as well, because it's going to be organizational risk, and no one wants to be, as I say on the front page of the New York Times in a negative way. So all of those things have to be there, but you have to talk about it, you need to lead about it from the front, and you need to peer, especially at the top level. Legal has to connect with IT, with security ops, with HR. We need to all hold hands together. This cannot just be one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true too. Like, I'm just thinking even just simple things, because I think people don't even want to touch it because they're scared they're going to put sensitive information. But just doing training around like toggling off the little thing in ChatGPT that says like, I'm not training a larger language model. Like just things like that, that allows people to feel like they have some control over where their information's going. But we should end, Tushar, but you are an absolute wealth of information. I could literally just sit here like listening to you and I'm like, God, your mind goes so quickly and in all these like kind of the depths of, you just get the depth of this. And I just appreciate your ability to kind of share it and put it in words that I think we all can understand. So I just want to thank you so much for coming and chatting with me, and thanks for being here.
Well, Bobby, thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it. I hope this has helped. And look, my only final thing is that this is a beautiful journey and all of us are on it. So how we help each other, how we talk about it, and how we ensure that we can achieve both personal and professional success is why we do what we do. So thank you so much for having me on board.